This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. The playoffs are in full throng. There are games every day. And while there are, it's almost impossible to bring you an up-to-date episode. So our playoff finals preview will be with you next week. In the meantime, it's another one of our Mindset of a Manager specials. We've got one from each of the EFL's three divisions on this latest episode of the official EFL podcast. So, how is an EFL manager feeling following 9 months of the regular season? What have been the highs? What have been the lows? What did they get right? What are they thinking that maybe didn't go so well? At the end of a season in which half the EFL clubs changed the man in charge, we've got three survivors from the Sky Bet Championship, which just completed his first campaign as a league manager. And having dealt with a whole raft of off-the-field issues, we've got the Birmingham City head coach, John Eustace, from Sky Bet League One, sadly relegated after five Herculean seasons in the third tier, Accrington Stanley manager, John Coleman, and from Sky Bet League Two, if at first you don't succeed, try again the following season, newly promoted Northampton Town manager, John Brady. Now, we're all Johns, so I think I'm going to go, if it's okay with you, Eusty, Coley. Do you want to be Brady or do you want to be John? John.
It's usually Braids is my nickname, Braids.
Braids. We'll have to go nicknames, otherwise we're all going to be talking all over each other. And just to join the dots as well, John Eustace is in Birmingham. Where are you, John Coleman?
I'm in Fuengirola in the Costa del Sol.
Thank you very much. Although looking very British with it. John Brady or Braids, I don't know whether to ask you how you are and what you're doing or ask you to pass me a shovel and a chisel, mate. You're looking very utility room there.
We've got a new building we're looking at for the football club and I'm stuck in a college building at the moment. Yes.
Fan. Fantastic. Well, it's good to have you all along. What's your process for reflection, Eusty? What's been going through your head? The season's been over for 8 days now. How do you look back and things?
Well, we got together with the staff. You know, we got real good staff at the club. We sat down. We had a debrief about the season, the highs and the lows, what we could improve, what we can do, what we did well, what we can do better, obviously. And you know, we just did it that way, really. We've had a good couple of days at the training ground reflecting on things and, you know, there's a lot of positivity to take out the season. Obviously, you know, there's some real tough periods as well, which we have to learn. Well, I certainly have to learn from being a young manager at this level. But, you know, overall, it's been a tough season, but obviously very satisfying as well. And, you know, we can take a lot into going into next season.
And how are you feeling, Eusty? What kind of emotions have you been feeling? How's your body physically? How's your mind?
Yeah, obviously tired, tired from a long season, but you know, it's part of the job. You know, it's to be expected. You know, it's not an easy job being a football manager, which obviously the other two guys will tell you. And, you know, to get through the season was a big achievement. You know, obviously we were favourites for relegation at the start of the season, and there's been lots of distractions, possibly excuses we could have used throughout the season, you know, as a group, which we didn't. You know, it's something I tried to bring in to the football club, a no excuse culture. You know, it was about, you know, really getting that connection back with the fans and the players, you know, and I think we've done that throughout the season. And you know, it's been a real positive season on and off the pitch, considering lots of things going on off it.
How are you feeling, Coley?
Well, you know, we were relegated the week before to all intents and purposes, so I've had a lot of time to get my head around it. I was numb for the first 2 days, to be fair. And then I've come to terms with it, and I think it was important we went down with dignity. We didn't start moaning and bitching and blaming everybody else or blaming this, that and the other. You know, we got to accept that we weren't good enough over this a period of 46 games. Lots of reasons why, but we've got to accept that we weren't good enough. So we go down with dignity, and then I'm refreshed in my mind that I want to build for next season. So I'm really looking forward to next season. I've had five, you know, unbelievable years after the promotion where people expected us to fall flat on our face, and we didn't. And we're competing against teams we shouldn't be competing against. And I don't want the big clubs to suffer. You know, when we got promoted the first time around and we went up and Sunderland came down, and everyone's making a big deal about us playing against Sunderland. And I, it's nice to play against the big clubs, but I want them where they belong. Now, unfortunately, you get into a stage where there's not enough places for the clubs, the big clubs. The big clubs are going to filter down to the lower leagues. And, you know, they're all fighting to get back up. And if you've seen the teams that we've been playing with on a regular basis, our fans have got to know playing against Sunderland, Portsmouth, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich, they're regular occurrences. Now, if you think about when we first came around, me and Jimmy, 1999, this is no disrespect to them teams, but Bamber Bridge were a league above us. Bamber Bridge could only dream about playing teams like that. So we've had been on an unbelievable journey, but I don't want the journey to end. And so, yeah, we'll regroup. We've got to do a lot of soul searching. I made loads of mistakes this year. My recruitment wasn't good enough, and in the past it has been very good, but this season wasn't good enough. And that's all disrespect to the players assigned, because you've got to take punts on players, and they were good in patches, but they weren't consistently good enough. And so we had a lot of injuries that led to them players having to play a lot of games, and we just couldn't get enough points to get over the line. But I'm really looking forward to next season, and I hope the players and the fans will join me in that and join me in the journey, because we're still going back and playing in the Football League, playing against really good teams, you know, like St Bradford, if they don't come up, you know, teams that we could have only dreamt about playing. We were playing Bradford Park Avenue 20 years ago. So that's how far we've come, and we feel we've earned our right to belong in this echelon now.
Do you think, Coley, because you have got a few years on the clock, when we get older, we appreciate that there will be hard knocks in life, and it makes it easier to process them. Doesn't mean that you don't care about what's happened, but you just accept the fact that sometimes in life it's our turn to be on the ropes.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I came to Accrington in 1999. This is the first time I've took a step backwards. Now, you won't get many clubs who've been on an upward trajectory for 24 years. Yeah, unless you're a top Premiership club, you can spend money like it's going out of fashion. How many clubs can you honestly think of below the Premiership whose club has been on an upward trajectory? There won't be many. So, you know, we've got to be proud of what we've done. Proud that we've fought our way through times when we've been in bad times, like many a club. We're very proud that we've never gone into administration, which I think is credit to a lot of people who worked hard behind the scenes. Not just myself and Jimmy and John Doolan, but lots of people who've worked hard to keep this club afloat. But we've never gone into admin. And so we've fought our way through adverse times, plenty of times. And we've had a bad setback. Why can't we go forward again? No reason why.
Well, good luck, John Brady, because I know that Coley is a pal of yours. You've got to try and come out of the tone that Coley has set and still express your emotions, because you did it, mate. It's amazing. The consistency that your team have shown over the last 2 years now has just been blistering. You looked knackered on the final whistle when you got over the line, Brad.
Thank you. And first and foremost, if I can emulate half of or even a quarter of what Coley's done, I think I'll be achieving very well, because what he's done, it's inspiring, first and foremost. And
thanks.
We did our course years ago, 2008, A license together, and I loved every minute with him. And you know, I've watched his journey from afar and really enjoyed that. And look, no doubt you'll be a strong force in League Two. And you know, we're lucky enough to come out on the right side this season. And especially after the season before, where we were nearly in virtually the same position a year later. And a lot of things came with trials and tribulations on the day last Monday. But look, we're just pleased that we got everything over the line and achieved promotion to League One.
And that high, how does the height of a high compare to the low of a low? I think there's a question in there somewhere, Braids, that which I hope you can fangle out of it. And the rest of you are welcome to jump in on that one as well.
Well, for me, I took over with 20 games to go with the task, with the challenge to try and keep the club in League One. Points per game, we would have been 15th, but we missed out by 3 points. And so I felt that heartbreak that we got relegated. And then I was tasked with trying to build a team because I hardly had any players left, and tried to build a team. And a lot of people told me, when you go down, it's very tough to challenge again, very tough. And we put a team together and we challenged and narrowly missed out on promotion by goal difference. And then obviously came around this year and it looks like we cruised it, and we never did. It was so tight right down to 5 minutes to go, and we end up taking that third spot by 4 points in the end. But it was never like that, and it was so tough all the way through. So for us, it's there have been highs and lows. And now I think the boys will tell you, in management, you have to be never too high, never too low. You've got to show everyone around you that you've got strength and not too much phases you, and you keep on your beliefs and your behaviours. But the boys will probably have their own.
Braids. You've got to celebrate a high like the one that you had 8 days ago. They're so rare in football. Surely you have to embrace that and love it and cuddle it and take it to bed with you, don't you?
Yeah, it was a slow burner, I've got to say, because on the coach on the way home, I had all the energy taken out of me, and it was literally as though I was just the boys were rocking on the back of the coach. I was looking over at Colin Calderwood, and it was as if I was just floating home on the coach ride, and it was just really serene and peaceful. I've got to say, it was quite a strange feeling. And I've just drunk every moment in really, but I haven't over celebrated. I've just enjoyed the moment with it. So yes, it's been more peaceful, and I've enjoyed it. Really enjoyed that is time.
Is this insightful, Eustace?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, both guys down there, I think, the job John's done over the 1,200 plus games that he's done, it's a legendary status, really, to be a manager for that long and do the amount of games he's done is amazing, really, and full credit to him. And I've seen his team play lots over the years, and they play some fantastic football, proper football, and he's done a magnificent job there. And the job John's done down there, especially after last season, he could have quite easily felt sorry for himself and, not done it. But again, I've watched them play on a number of occasions this year as well, and they've been excellent. And full credit to both, managers. I know how hard it is, to manage. I think we've all done it in non-league as well. Brackley and Acton in non-league. I was at Kidderminster for 2 years. Yeah. And, there's that many good people at that level. And good players, good coaches, good people, more importantly. And, it's a fantastic achievement for everyone that gets in the league, and they are successful, because, the amount of work that goes on in the lower leagues is it's not credited enough, I don't think. And,
Do you not think that gives you 100%, a good ground?
100%. No. Honestly, John,
I think
the 2 years that I went, obviously I left QPR... I left Derby as a player. I was offered the 23s role at a number of clubs. But then the opportunity to go full-time at National League North with Kidderminster, was a sink or swim time, really, for me. Obviously the career, I'd played a lot in the higher leagues, and to go down there and manage for my first time, if it wouldn't have gone well, I don't think, I could have continued. There's no excuses, really. But the grounding I had there for 2 years, the experiences I had, you could never have dreamt of. And I'm not saying the job I've got now is easy, because it's far from being easy. But all the experiences I had in non-league, I've had exactly the same at Birmingham. It's just a bigger name club, bigger players, and they earn bigger wages, and there's bigger fans. But apart from that, it's the same, really.
This is a question for all of you. Whoever wants to jump in can. I want to know how it feels to feel pressure.
Well, I think you bring pressure on yourself, because if you've got standards, I actually don't feel exterior pressure me, or external pressure, because I put that much pressure on myself because I want to do so well. Now, you know, we've got two lads there who've both managed at non-league and know how difficult it is. And there's lots of managers who get the first crack out of a job at Premiership level. And it's, you think you haven't done the hard yards. And it is hard yards. Managing a non-league is hard yards. You know, the fires that you have to put out, these lads will tell you, they're off the graph. And you've just got to think on your feet. You've always got to be able to think on your feet. You've got to be flexible. And so if you're putting enough pressure on yourself, you can sort of ignore external pressure, but you can only do that for so long if you're good, basically. You can ignore external pressure if you're good and you're putting pressure on yourself. It's when your players aren't good and all of a sudden the pressure doesn't come on the players, the pressure comes on you. And then that's a different kettle of fish, what you gotta deal with. And I've been doing it for so long, you feel as though it's just water off a duck's back. It's not. You know, we all like to be liked. Everyone's got an inbuilt feeling to be loved, haven't they? So, but sometimes you think, Jesus, do you not know what we're going through?
Well, hence we're doing this, because I want to know. That's why I'm asking you the question. Go for it.
But, John, a lot of people don't know the context we go through each week, do they? They don't know the context of the situation and why you've got so many injuries, or why haven't you gone and got that player, because ultimately, we can't afford him. And what you don't want to do is tell your finances out there, and you don't want people to listen to that. But people don't understand the context you're working in at times. But and you have to smokescreen that a little bit, and you do. And it's tough.
How many times have you lost a game and the fans think you should have played X player? X player hasn't played, but he's become a better player at 5 o'clock than he was at 3 o'clock because he wasn't playing.
Absolutely.
And they don't see him insane every day like we see him. They don't see that he can't get near the squad because I know he's not good enough. But they think, he hasn't played. He must be better because we've lost. And trying to get that through to the average fan, it's difficult to compute that. And it's pointless trying to say it because you're flogging a dead horse, really.
So on that point, I would say this season for me, from last season, compared to, we've only got where we are financially, probably mid-table both seasons. But what I've done, we put ourselves up there. And so the weight of expectation was there. And, you know, I carried that round for a lot because I put a lot of pressure on myself. But then I did a lot of research on expectation, etc. And you know what, John, I couldn't control that. And it was, and I had to go through my own little journey dealing with that. And I have to be honest about that. And it took its toll on me for a little bit because, you know, at this level, I've done non-league, etc. But it's more high profile, a lot of things come with it. And I learned to deal with that. Deal with that expectation.
You and Eustace are going to go through the same emotion, really, because you can raise people's expectations, you can't lower them. And that's the big thing. Once you raise them, you can't lower them.
Right.
And so they're always wanting more, and sometimes you'll max out what you can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, Eustace might be feeling that now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a societal thing as well, Eustace, isn't it? You know, everybody seems to have eyes on a prize one step higher than the resources allow. I mean, the question about pressure that, and also, I suppose, dovetailing into that subculture of the stuff you can and can't say. I mean, let's be honest, Eustace, with the stuff you've had going on of ownership issues and, you know, stadium not at full capacity and training ground fires, presumably there has had to be times when you've had to very delicately whittle your way along a line and put on a strategic brave front, but really inside, you know, there's a different narrative
but
going on.
Again, you know, coming back from the experiences in non-league, you know, that again, it's led me in good stead. Everything that's happened this year, you know, it's you have to think quickly. You have to think on your feet when there's a training. When you go to training, you haven't got the training ground to use, you know, at non-league, and you have to go and find one, and you have to, you know, get kit from someone, borrow balls, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's fantastic for me. So coming into Birmingham, you know, whatever was thrown at us as a group, we were fine. You know, I was in control of it. I got fantastic staff as well, both being in non-league, Keith Downing and Matt Gardner, you know, and, you know, real good people. And as I say, you know, we try and create a no-excuse culture at the club. You know, we got some big-name players at the football club, but they bought into everything we wanted to do. And, you know, it was great. Now, the expectation of the fans is different. Birmingham's a big football club and they expect to be in the Premier League. No matter what the differences or what the problems are off the field, they expect to finish high in the league. And now with the new owners hopefully coming in and putting finances into the club now, the pressure to be in the top 10, to, you know, to really challenge, it will be a different pressure possibly to the one that we've just faced this season. So, you know, it's going to be interesting going forward.
Yeah, but I mean, I've kind of watched all of you, Coley, towards the end there, scrutinising your results. And Eustace, obviously, you had a particularly bad run. I won't remind you what the stat was. You'll know it all too well. And Braids, I can't imagine what you were going through in that week between things, not quite working out the penultimate weekend of the season, didn't get the win you could have had, and then knowing that on paper everybody was going, "Ooh, that looks tough," and they've only got that. I mean, I can't imagine what that angst and anxiety and that whole hybrid of chemicals floating around your body is like.
I have a good mentor in Steve Salas. He does a lot of mindset work, and we're just having some good conversations, just some really down-to-earth conversations. I said, "Look, mate, I'm still breathing and I'm okay." And that's, I had to normalize a lot of things to myself. And, you know, when you go through as a manager, you can get carried away with that pressure, but you just try and keep it very normal. I think, you know, Coley and John, they've played as well. And I think from your playing days, you take a lot of that in as well. But then you've got to manage 20 other players and your staff. And I think I wanted the week to come around pretty quick, I've got to say. And obviously, there was that extra added pressure from the year before. And especially going with 5 minutes to go when we hear Stockport have got a penalty and they put six more minutes on the board for us. And then if you flip back a year when we, Bristol Rovers needed a 5-goal swing at half time. And then 81 minute, they're 4 goals behind. 83 minutes, they're 3 goals behind. 85 minutes, they're 2 goals behind. And you are thinking, here we go again, when you hear a penalty awarded to Stockport and 6 minutes to go. And then just luckily that Hartlepool save it. But my attitude was I wanted to go on and win the game. And, you know, just to get across that line was sheer relief more than anything.
Yeah. What's the single hardest party to manage, Eusty? Is it owners? Is it supporters, media, that kind of general expectations? Is it the players? Which of those elements is the biggest challenge?
For me,
it's
everything. You know, it's a collective, really, you know. And
I didn't give you that option. No, I said you got to pick one, mate. I didn't
obviously, there's
give
different
you that
pressures
option.
From everyone, you know. And what I've tried to do is, I think Braid said it earlier, you know, not to get carried away with the highs and the lows, you know, to keep very level-headed and just to try and keep everyone involved in the football club the same. You know, we went on some fantastic runs throughout the season where everyone then started to think about being in the top 10 in the playoffs. And then I said there'd be difficult moments throughout the season where when it happens, we have to stick together and, you know, you have to, you know, everyone stays on the same page. And I think we lost 9 in 11 at one point during January and February through different reasons. But as we spoke about earlier, people don't really want to hear the excuses. They just look for results. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we had to get through as a club and as staff and players and owners and all the directors, which we did. And, you know, we finished the season strongly then. So, you know, it's about managing everyone's expectations, in my opinion.
When we won the league 5 years ago, we went on an unbelievable run, I think. We went on, I think it was a 20-game run. I think we had the most points in Europe. We took one more point than PSG. And we'd won something like 18 out of 20. And I never made a sub in 17 of them.
That's
so
right.
So the same team was playing every week. And my big challenge was managing the players who weren't playing, because I knew at some point I was going to need them. And, you know, you couldn't go on playing forever with the same team. We were just lucky we didn't have any injuries, no suspensions. I think we had to change the team once because the goalie was in a car crash. Alan Chapman on the way to the game. And so I spent a lot of my time then. I just let John and Jimmy work with the first team we were playing. And I spent all my time around the lads who weren't playing, trying to keep them on side, trying to keep them motivated. Because I knew we did use them towards the end, and they were vital. But I've found over the years, when things are going good or bad, the players who aren't playing, they've got to be ready to step up. And you've got to keep them on side, you've got to keep them motivated, you've got to keep them interested, and you've also got to keep them physically active, you know, so that they can compete, that they don't blow up when they come on because they haven't played for ages. And I find that is one of the biggest challenges in management. When you've got a settled side, trying to still keep the ones who aren't playing interested.
Yeah, and Braids, I mean, you know, what we don't want to do, everybody, I suppose, has a right to be to ambition, don't they? Every supporter has a right to dreams, but you're the one that has to marry the actual resources on the ground to try and make sure the gap isn't too big between what Joe Smith in row three wants v what you can actually provide.
Well, you don't want, like you say, you don't want to kill off their enthusiasm, their spirit, the fans, but you sometimes you feel you have to temper expectation. Certainly do, because, you know, from the boys have talked, what's reality to what they get carried away, the fans sometimes thinking, it can be polar opposites at times. And it's hard to manage that, but ultimately you want to give them wins, you want to give them the best team possible. But it's football, and it's not always going to happen, is it? You know, the boys, you know what it's like. But you hope that you give the best of yourself. Well, you know you give the best of yourself all the time, and you hope that the fans then buy into that, and through the tough times they support you, and they can see that authenticity, that honesty from you. And especially watching Coley over the years, you know he's got that with his fan base, certainly.
Are managers being unfairly treated as the scapegoat here? I gave the stats. Half the EFL clubs have changed their manager this season. 11 clubs changed their manager twice. Is that fair? Every one of you is thinking, oh, please don't let me start the answers on this.
No, what I think about, I think sometimes managers are too lauded, mate. I honestly do. And likewise, they can get blamed a lot, and likewise, they can get lauded a lot. You're never going to be a good manager if you haven't got a good set of players. You're only as good as your players, and you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. You can't. And you can do your best, and you can get a little bit more out of them. But if you haven't got good players, you can't be a good manager. You can't. And people who think they can, they're kidding themselves. You know, you need good players. And we've all sometimes stumbled across things where you don't expect it to happen, and all of a sudden it clicks. Four or five players click into place. But you need players. You need good players. And without them, you know, a manager is helpless, I think.
I think that's hugely true. You're only as good as your players. But I look at a lot of chief executives, chairmen. I think they've chosen throughout seasons gone by. It's where managers don't. You look at it, and as managers, we can tell people don't fit their culture or don't fit. There's not a fit to that. You think to yourself, why have they done that? And so. But when they're turning them over, you were saying 11 clubs have done it twice this season. So have they not looked at their own selves and said, well, our process can't be right here if we're doing that, you know? And yeah, it's disappointing. The manager carries the can all the time. but also people above need to have a look at who they're employing. Is that the right fit, in my opinion?
Yeah, but by the same token, then for me to play devil's advocate here, I suppose, you know, if a club is on a particularly bad run, how many defeats in a row is it fair to let the guy in the dugout have before you take action? Because, you know, if you've got a hole in your roof at home, you're not going to sit there forever and let the water ingress, are you? Eventually, you're going to phone a roofer and say, come and change me ridge tiles.
I totally get that. But at the end of the day, they're the ones that have got the club have to try and make that work. What are they doing for him? What are they supplying him with? What are they, you know, are they helping him in certain ways? But, you know, at the end of the day, they've got to try and make that work. But I totally get what you're saying there. But I just feel that it's a culture now that it's a throwaway culture, I feel, at the moment. And, you know, it's trying to mold them, help them, etc. And I'd like to see that a little bit more than just getting rid of them straight away, to be honest.
You can also look at the fact that if your roof's leaking, why would you change your front door? And you've got to think of what is the problem? Is the problem your roof or is the problem your front door? And sometimes they don't change the problem. And sometimes, a lot of the time, the problem is that the players that they've got haven't been recruited properly. Now, I'll hold my hand up. This season, I was responsible for our recruitment this season. And ultimately, the reason why we went down is because we didn't have enough backup for the players who got injured. They weren't consistently good enough. That's no disrespect to the players of science, but they weren't consistently good enough. Now, I was in charge of recruitment, so I've got no qualms with that. I've got no qualms with anyone labelling the blame at me. But that can't be said for lots of other clubs. Lots of other clubs, the recruitment isn't the department of the manager. He has to deal with the players that he gets given. And if that's the situation, that's a very, very difficult pill to swallow when you know that the players that you're getting given aren't good enough.
While we're doing confessions with Clem, anything you want to get off your chest, Eustie? You know, we just had a confession from John. Is there something where you look back on the season and go, I didn't get that.
Listen, obviously, when you're going through bad spells, you're looking at different formations. We had injuries, real bad injuries at important times throughout the season. And sometimes you can maybe a little bit stubborn with the formation you're playing and, you know, you don't want to change. But, you know, those are the things I learned, really, you know, to be a bit more open with my decision making on the team selection and changing formations.
How do you mean open? John?
Just making them quick, making the change of formation quicker than probably what I did. You know, you're looking for solutions because it's been a successful formation for half the season. You're then looking at, I need to continue with that formation. The players know it, you know, off by heart. Now, if I stick, you know, a couple of fresh faces in that formation, you still want it to work, but you can just see it's just slightly off and it's not working. So then, do you continue doing a lot of work throughout pre-season and that first half of the season playing a certain way and you don't want to change, and then, you know, due to another injury or suspension, then you do change and then it works straight away. You think, why didn't I do that a little bit earlier? Why wasn't I a little bit braver with my decision making? You know, and possibly that happened throughout this season, but, you know, it's all good learning experience as well for myself. You know, I mean, John, you know, with 1,200 games under his belt, you know, maybe that decision making comes quicker or a little bit easier for himself. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I want to, John, I aspire to be like, and, you know, and be able to make them decisions maybe quicker throughout the season.
Eustie, this is a tough question. I'm going to go ask it. Does the fact that opportunities are so limited, does the fact that clubs are so trigger happy, does that kind of compound what you're feeling? Did you ever at any point this season feel a moment of panic and think, blimey, could I be the next one? Does that come into your head when you're trying to find your way in your first league appointment?
No, definitely not. I certainly didn't feel like that throughout the season. You know, I've got a very good director of football in Craig Gardner there, who, you know, who's really helped me a lot this season as well. And, you know, ultimately, we talk about the players. You're only as good as your players. Now, you know, for the first half of this season, it was the best start for 10 years after 24 games, you know, and these are the same players then who were going through a difficult spell during January and February. So the group was solid. You know, I knew we were doing the right things on the training field. You know, the coming into training every day was still bubbly, it was still good. And, you know, although results weren't great, performances were still good. So I knew we'd come through it eventually. And yeah, you're right, different clubs, they might have pulled the trigger. But, you know, I've come to Buncombe to build, you know, to build for over the next 3, 4, 5 seasons and really make this club great again, you know. So, you know, I know what I'll sign a 3-year contract. I know that I've got the backing of the club. So, you know, I knew we'd be okay. And the players we got a lot of experienced players who've been there and done it in the Championship. You know, we've got a lot of really exciting young players as well. So the mix was very good. And, you know, we kept believing in what we were doing. And eventually we came through it. We changed our formation. And, you know, we were good again in the second half of the season.
Brades, why is your profession so addictive? Why do you all love it so much, despite the fact that from the outside it feels so darn precarious?
Strangely enough, I said to my wife the other day that, I'll tell you just a quick story about it. It was my wife's birthday 2 days after the season finished. I took her out for lunch.
Good on you. Well done.
Luckily, I remembered it. And and then I came out of lunch and then I was right. I've got to get back onto the videos, watching the videos. I now need to organise training for tomorrow. And I went to myself, no, you don't. No, your season's over. You're finished. You haven't got playoffs. You're finished. And you're trying to convince your mind that the season's over. I don't know if the boys have had that. And then what's happened this week? Because you're in that adrenaline every day, you're organising, and the wins are, it's a good feeling when, especially tactically, you organise the team to play a certain way. There might be some tweaks you do and you get it right. And that's probably the biggest buzz for me when you do that and things come off. And I said to my wife, strangely enough, I'm missing it. I'm missing it already. And I'm trying to tell myself, calm down. Just enjoy the break. And I don't
I can totally relate, because even as a broadcaster in the industry, it's so immersive. And I'm working all over the world now and stuff. And I've come back, and the last 3 or 4 weeks have been crazy. And I had a period of back-to-back Player of the Year awards for a couple of clubs, with a dinner elsewhere, and up early to do one of these podcasts. And my daughter won a special award at work, so wanting me. And then I kind of woke up one morning, and we're almost like addicted to the adrenaline, are we? We're almost, and even addicted to the anxiety, Coley, a little bit of what am I supposed to be doing next? How am I catching up? That kind of stuff.
100%, you're addicted to the stress. So when I was out of work, I was out of work for a year, and it felt like about 20. So when I got the soccer watch there, and the big thing I missed was Saturday afternoon, or Saturday morning, waking up on a Saturday morning, and my stomach churning. And I loved that as a player. Now, the stress on me as a player was different. All I had to do was go out and score, which I was only playing non-league, so invariably I did. It was dead easy. But, like, the stress of your stomach churning, thinking, what's it going to be like today? How are the players going to play? Are we going to win? We need to win. What's going to be the situation around us? What are they going to do? What is this team going to do? What are that team going to do? And all that stress, and suddenly you haven't got it. And you miss it, you crave it. It's like a drug. And it's funny, really, because as a footballer, I was a centre forward. So you wanted your team to win, but the personal gratification of scoring a goal, you can't beat that high. That is like a drug that you can't replicate it. Now, when your team scores as a manager, it's like you scored as a player. You get exactly the same buzz, exactly the same feeling. And it's like getting a shot of whatever drug that you need, a shot of adrenaline. And once you're getting that, you want more and more and more of it. Now, we didn't score anywhere near enough goals this season, but hopefully we will score more next season. But the feeling you get, the lads will tell you can't beat it. You can't beat it, especially when you know you're going to win the game as well. So it's all right when you go 1-0 up. But you know when you make it 3 with 4 minutes to go, and the lads will tell you the feeling that you go. It's like wearing a size 9 shoe, having a pair of size fives on for 90 minutes and then taking them off. The feeling is unbelievable. And you can't buy that feeling. And you only get it if you're the manager.
Brilliant.
You, Steve, have you in a crazy sort of way, the relief that the season's over, you came through unscathed, you put the club in their best position for half a decade and everything. But have you felt that kind of almost loneliness, emptiness over the space of the last week since the season ended? That looking over your shoulder going, wait, what am I supposed to be? Oh, I don't have anything to do.
No, definitely not. No, I've been... you know, at the end of the season, you know, we achieved what we needed to achieve. You know, we got some fantastic stats for the younger boys and, you know, the number of minutes and all that kind of stuff, which was great. You know, the remit of the club was to stay in the league, develop the young players, get the connection back with the fans, which we did. And, you know, as soon as the season finished then, you know, it was, okay, let's have a, you know, let's reflect, let's see what we can improve on. But it certainly, you know, I was relieved to get over to the 46 games, you know, stay in the league. And now it's kind of a different emotions. Now it's an excitement to maybe think about how we're going to grow, how we're going to build. But, you know, I'm certainly not looking and thinking about training. And
yeah, so you're not, there's no gap in your life. There's no that kind of buzz that the guys were describing so eloquently there. There's no kind of...
Not after a week, no, definitely not. And we certainly didn't score 3-4 goals like John's team does every week. You know, if we scored one, I was buzzing. So, I certainly
okay.
don't.
Okay, we need to wrap things up. I want to talk to you about rest, recuperation, personal reset. Are you doing that now, Coley? Is that, you're obviously...
Well, it's funny really, because I'm in Spain and I'm supposed to be on holiday switching off. Can you switch off?
No,
you can't switch off.
You could have told me to get lost. You didn't need to do this. You could have said, no, don't ring me.
No, I enjoy doing this, to be honest. But it's also the fact of that my wife's been with me for 41 years. We've been married 41 years.
Wow,
and in all that time, she's seen me as a player. She's seen what I've gone through as a player, as a manager for 25 years. So she perfectly understands that I've got to pick the phone up. So I'm still trying to build the team for next season. So, of course, I'm going to be answering my phone. That doesn't mean I'm on the phone 24-7. Yeah, I'll answer the phone 9 or 10 times, which can be an inconvenience. And if she wanted to take it personally, she would. She's known me long enough to know that it's not personal, that I want to do my job, I want to be successful at my job, and this is the hunger that drives me. And we go through this together. So, yeah, I'm switching off to a certain extent. But I'm never going to stop trying to rebuild the team. And you're always thinking that. And anyone who says they can't switch off, I think they're lying a bit. Because you can't. And I wouldn't want it any other way, to be honest.
Yeah, and there's opportunity. Suddenly the story of Jimmy Ryan, who was with you a decade ago, popped in my head, who I think I'm right in saying you're Jimmy Bell, discovered playing beach football in Cuba or something, didn't he?
That's right. He met his dad.
Yeah, so you got to be switched on even on holiday to keep your eyes peeled. There might be somebody kicking a ball with a couple of kids there.
Paul Cuke's got a mantra, never knock off. And I think you can't go far wrong with that.
Well, I don't know. I think you've got to step away and get that bit of subjectivity. What do you think, John Brady?
There's a balance, isn't it? You're always trying to find the balance, but I don't think you ever get that perfect balance because, you know, the season's done now, but you know, like we've been in today, recruitment meeting, and now you're going to speak to agents, players, and if you're not doing that, if you're not planning, if you're not planning pre-season and preparing and etc., you're behind the eight ball. Well, you feel you are, and if you're as good as the boys on the podcast, you want to be better every year. You want to keep, you know, Coley's got that drive, and he's been doing it this long, and you know that's inspiration in itself. But I don't think you get to this level if you haven't got that drive. And it's same with you Mark, you talking about, you know, in the media, you know, what drives you? It drives you speaking to people and doing your job to the best of your ability, and you don't switch off because you want to come back better next year, and you want to be in the best position you can. And the biggest thing, if you can get, like the guys say, if you can get recruitment right, it doesn't have to give you a great start to the season as well.
You came in late, didn't you, last summer? So this would be your first kind of carrying completely through a close season, trying to juggle family commitments, personal recuperation and rejuvenation, v doing the stuff the guys have just described, trying to strategically plan how you move forward.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, you know, it was all about the recruitment, but also, you know, we did it at Kidderminster. Yes. So, you know, first year at Kidderminster, you know, we were second in National North. We lost 11 players all going into the league above or into the league. So we had to recruit a new team that summer and try and be competitive the following year. It took longer than the summer to do that. And after 10 games in, we eventually recovered and recruited properly again. So, you know, I know how important the recruitment side is. And, you know, everyone at Birmingham, you know, as John just said there, we were in today. You know, we were talking about players and, you know, recruitment's key. So, you know, you never switch off. And, you know, I'm looking forward to a good summer of trying to help build the club again.
Well, I like to think we've done a bit. Have you got any young loanees that you might need to be put in safe hands next season, Eustace? Any guys you might want to sort of farm out there? You've got a couple of good contacts.
I think they'll all be playing, okay, mate. Oh, listen, fantastic. I think they'll all be playing for us, and fortunately.
Coley Braids, I did try for you guys just to get you ahead of the crowd, but it didn't quite work. Guys, listen, commiserations, Coley, but you seem rejuvenated. It's great to talk to you, Eusty, and Braids, fantastic, delighted for you. So have a great summer, and we'll zone in again in August and go through all the madness one more time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That is it for this episode. We'll be back next week with our playoff final weekend preview. Big thank you to John Brady, to John Coleman, and to John Eustace. If you enjoyed this special episode, then do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.